I'm 81.
Were you drafted or did you
Yes.
enlist? You were drafted.
But you're not drafted in the Marine Corps, you volunteer.
Is that the way it goes?
That's the way it
Okay.
goes.
So how you have that photo that you brought for us of when you were 19. Is that when you were
I
drafted at
was
19?
I had my 19th birthday on EWOL.
Tell me what it was like when you initially found out you were going into the military. What year was it and what?
1944. In fact, I had just graduated from high school. The graduation date was the 4th of June, and I was, on the 30th of June, I became a Marine and then shipped to San Diego for boot camp. That was about 8 weeks. I came home for supposedly a 10-day leave, which if you went by bus, it was about 3 days going and three or more days, so you had 4 days at home. And then I reported to Camp Pendleton and became a machine gun. It was a battalion training for using machine guns. And that lasted until November. And on Thanksgiving Day of 1944, we shipped out to Hawaii. Then you were in a transit depot until you were assigned. And on Christmas Day, believe it or not, I sailed on an inner island mail vessel to Hilo. And from there across Mauna Kea volcano on the Big Island down to Camp Tarawa. Well, the president said everybody had turkey for Thanksgiving. We didn't. We had hot dogs and cold cuts. Then that's when I joined B Company, 1st Battalion, 27th Marines, as part of a machine gun squad. That was on Christmas Day that I joined my machine gun squad, and the Marine Corps decided that a machine gun squad should consist of 8 Marines because they had, I suppose, in the island hopping, men became short of ammunition. So we carried 2 boxes of ammunition, one in each, and then we also carried a box in our backpack. So we were loaded down with about 60 pounds of ammunition. Well, anyway, we left Hawaii, left the Big Island the latter part of January and had a practice landing on Maui we stayed overnight and then sailed to Pearl Harbor. And we had Liberty in Honolulu a couple times. And then on about the 27th, maybe, of January, we set sail for, supposedly, they never told us where we were going, but it was everybody knew that it was probably Iwo Jima. The Air Force had been bombing that for 74 days. And the Japanese would fill in the craters, and they were back flying their planes intercepting B-29s the next morning. But anyway, we sailed then to Aniwetok aboard what was called an APA. It was called USS Hansford. It was a brand new APA, far superior to the first vessel I sailed on. And from Aniwetok, we sailed to Saipan. And on about the 11th or 12th of February, we had a practice landing on Tinian, but the water was so rough, we just got essentially to the shore and then turned around and came back. And then we transferred to an LST, a landing ship tank, which carried our amphibious tractors. And we got our ammunition. People went ashore and brought back ammunition for us. And we set sail on the 16th of February for Iwo. Well, on the night, I think it was probably of the 17th, maybe the 18th, our LST lost steerage in convoy. And that's serious.
Well, I'd imagine if you can't steer.
Well, if we had been rammed by another vessel, we'd have gone down the J.B. Jones locker quick. But I happened to be on guard duty down in the tank deck, and we heard this honk, this horn honking. I think it honked four times. We didn't know what that meant until later. It meant stand by for collision. Well, fortunately, any vessels astern of us, apparently they missed us anyway. And next morning, we were all by ourselves out with us with a destroyer escort off our starboard side, and that was the only vessel around us. And somehow or another, they jerry-rigged that steering apparatus, and we woke up on the morning of the 19th, and we were at Iwo Jima. And that was a black, forbidding-looking island.
Describe it for me.
Well, it was a tradition when you were to go into combat to have steak and eggs for breakfast, which the Navy provided us. The medical people will tell you that's the worst thing that a person can have if they ever get wounded in the abdomen. But that, I remember that steak was pretty tough, but we ate it anyway. And then we're going up on deck, you could look over and see the Black Island. Suribachi showed up, and of course the Navy vessels, the battleships and that, were bombarding. And that was really quite a sight to see all the firepower that was being directed on Iwo Jima. And you got the impression that no one could live through such a bombardment. Well, then we went down on the tank deck and got aboard our landing vehicle, their amphibious tractors is what they were. And eventually the tractors moved out, and we circled, and eventually we started towards the beach. And we were the rightmost company of the 5th Marine Division. On further to our right would be the 4th Marine Division. So we were sort of the dividing point between the 4th and 5th Marine Division. And we landed on what was then called, and still would be today, Red Beach 2. As we went by a command and control vessel, which I should know what the name of that is, but anyway, we came so close that they were taking all kinds of pictures. And I have a picture of our tractor, and I can see myself, and they say, well, that's Jim Martin, there's no doubt. Well, anyway, when we hit the beach, amphibious tanks had preceded us, but the beach was at an angle, and so those amphibious tanks, which had a 75-millimeter gun on them, couldn't see anything, so they backed off in the water and fired, I don't know how many times it fired, but then we came up beside them, and our tractors had, the ramps would drop down and back. The older models, you had to go over the side. Well, that tractor was far enough on the beach that I didn't even get my feet wet. And so I think I was probably the last man off that tractor because I had manned the 30 caliber machine gun on there and never fired it because I couldn't see anything to fire. Well, everybody, they always told us, get off the beach. That's the worst place you can be. So the machine gun squad and the riflemen that were also aboard our tractor, they all left. And the first thing that I, after I got out of the tractor, the first thing I saw was an airplane coming down the beach, and I thought, that's a Jap strafing. Well, it was a Navy observation plane. And what he was doing that close to the deck, I'll have no idea, but the Japanese opened up on him. And when he went by about 50 feet above my head, the pilot was slumped over the controls, and the observer was facing me. I can still see his face of terror. And that plane turned and crashed in the water. And I don't know if it took out any tractor or anything, but that was my introduction. Well, then I said the 23rd Psalm. I wanted to make sure that the good Lord was on my side. And then I started off the beach. And I hadn't gone too far, and I ran into the ammunition carrier just ahead of me, and he had been wounded. And there was a corpsman close by, and I knew that he could be helped. And I asked him where the other members of the machine guns gun were. He said, "I haven't seen anyone since I left the tractor." And so I knew where we belonged, and so I went forward.
And you were the only one?
There was all kinds of Marines all over the place, but I'd run, you know, that sand, you could go 30 yards and be just out of wind because of all the weight and the fact you had sand. So you'd dive into a shell hole and try to get your wind back and get enough nerve up to get up and go again. And finally, up near the first airfield, there was probably a drainage ditch. And I got down and was crawling along in that drainage ditch. And all of a sudden, before me was a wire stretched across. And you know very well that was a mine. It was attached to a mine. So here I'm learning. I suppose I'm kind of an amateur at being in combat. So what do I do about a wire stretched in front of me? I knew I couldn't touch it. So eventually a sergeant came by and he said, "Back up and we'll go up on the airfield together. And whatever happened, somebody may have been killed if they ever touched that or tripped on that wire." But we climbed up on the airfield and immediately we got bracketed with either artillery or mortar fire. And they started out, there were other Marines up there, and they asked if were anybody from B-127 was present. And they said, "Yes, they're over to the right, not too far." And so I left the sergeant and went over. And they were underneath a concrete shelter. It was probably for the Japanese. It was kind of a curvature top to it. And they had set the machine gun up inside that. It was a very good position. And we started asking how many of our group, because there were only, I think, three with the machine gun group. We had our assistant gunner, the gunner, and one ammunition carrier. And I knew that we had lost one man by being wounded, but come to find out we had one killed and another man wounded. So out of eight, three had been put out of commission before just getting up to the airfield. So that meant five of us were left. Well, one Marine and apparently his buddy, he forgot about being a machine gun ammunition carrier. He and his buddy went off on their own someplace. But later in the afternoon, he came back. So we ended up with five people. We had lost the corporal of our machine gun squad was one that was wounded. And then, We came down off the airfield to reorganize because our platoon leader had been killed and our gunny sergeant had been killed. And how many riflemen, I have no idea. But they claimed later on that about 30% of our company had been casualties the first day. So we came down off the field supposedly to reorganize, and down at the base there were the media. People from Time Magazine, Newsweek, some of the radio space, I suppose CBS and things like that were down there. And that was a big surprise. How'd they get up there? I don't know. And then we tried to go around the end of the airfield. And the Japanese had every square meter of that island zeroed. And I think we made three attempts to try to go around, and we just couldn't do it. So later that evening, things quieted down, and we did get around on the other side of the airfield. And there were a large group of wrecked Japanese planes. And being curious, we went up there to look at those planes. And we hadn't been there too long, and all of a sudden the snipers started out. So we got out of there and back to our foxholes. Yeah.
Bad idea, realized in retrospect. What happened then from Iwo Jima? How long were you there?
I was there till the 11th of March. It was 21 days. and then I got wounded. The Japanese mortars, they had knee mortars like you wouldn't believe it. And if actually, where we were, you could see those shells coming up, and we were told to get down where we had more protection. And it was between essentially two outcrops, and I was leaning down on my knee, and I saw a mortar shell hit very close to the man back of me. And I thought to myself, that man is dead. Next thing I know, something really hit me in the shoulder and knocked me forward. And when you were wounded, you were supposed to call for a corpsman. The Japanese were not supposed to be able to pronounce L's. So the code word for a corpsman was Tallulah. I don't know if you remember Tallulah Bankhead. She was an actress way back when, but that's... So I forgot that code word. And there were other Marines around me, but maybe I got out the word Tallulah. I don't remember. But I found out they carried me over to an overhang and dressed my wound. I actually had a wound here in my hip, which was much worse than the one in my shoulder. But I suppose they dressed those and gave me some morphine so I wasn't feeling any pain. And they loaded me aboard the Jeep with I don't know how many stretchers were on the Jeep. And we sat until they had more wounded before they went back to the aid station. And I thought, now is the time they're going to drop a mortar right on that Jeep. But anyway, I went back to an aid station. They redressed my wounds and then to the 5th Marine Division Hospital, and I was sitting in there waiting to see a doctor, and I started trying to clean out my pockets, and here I come up with, I don't know, 3 or 4 grenades, and some poor corpsman, I don't think, who had ever been in the front lines, I said, I think you better have these, and he walked away shaking. Well, when I got in to see the doctor, I said, Doc, if you can get those pieces of shrapnel out, I sure would like them for a souvenir. And he said, son, they're too deep, and you don't know how lucky you are. If that one in your hip had been about 2 centimeters higher, you'd have lost your kidney. Well, that afternoon, I was to fly then to Guam, and that's where Floyd Stone was a radio operator on that plane. And so we flew to Guam. The Navy hospital was completely filled, so they put us in an Army field hospital. And I suppose I was there for maybe a week, week and a half, and then flew from there to Honolulu. It was kind of the planes would, I think we may have landed first at maybe Aniwetok, Kwajalein, one of those islands, then from there to Johnson Island, which is just an island just hardly above the water, and then to Hickam Field, and up to Tripler, which is the Army hospital, but being Navy people or Marines, they transferred us to what was then Aya Heights Naval Hospital, which actually looked over Pearl Harbor, and you could see all the ships down there. And I was there, I remember being there when they announced that President Roosevelt had died. I went up to see a doctor who I thought was a shrink, and come to find out he wasn't. Later on, I got my personal records, and he was just an MD. But one of the questions he asked me, which would you rather do, go back to your outfit or go back to the States? Well, you know my answer.
Go back to the States.
That's right. And so I flew from there to Oakland and was at the Naval Hospital in Oakland and had Liberty in San Francisco a couple times. That was a great time. And then by a hospital train, it was all white with Red Cross all the way to Great Lakes Naval Hospital. And as you went through stations, the people were on the platforms waving, and it's quite an experience. And we had people that had all kinds of casts on their arms up in the air, and to try to get them into a bathroom was impossible almost. But anyway, that train got to Great Lakes, and I was there in the hospital Well, on July 4th, I remember they had a ceremony where we received our Purple Hearts. And a couple of days later, I was on convalescent leave back to Rapid City. And that was 30 days. And I got back, and I knew very well now I was going to go on active duty. And so I requested Captain's Mast and asked for my 30-day annual leave, which I got. And back to Rapid for another 30 days. And while there, they dropped the nuclear weapons on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I think within a couple of days, my leave time was up. And so I got aboard a train and ended up at Philadelphia Navy Yard. And I was in Philadelphia when the ticker came over that the Japanese had surrendered. And people went crazy. First of all, they closed the bars. That didn't bother me because I was only 19. I couldn't get in the bar anyway. But I never kissed so many girls in one night. It's unbelievable. And the next night, I got liberty again and the same thing. But they put an end to that. And I suppose within a week, I was on a train heading for Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. I mean, they didn't know what they were doing. They were just trying to get people someplace besides where all they were overcrowded, I guess. And so I spent until November at Camp Lejeune and then assigned to what was called the 82nd replacement draft and by troop train all the way across to Camp Pendleton. Believe that? I never traveled so much in my life. They looked at our records and they found that it wouldn't be worth the Marine Corps' time to send me back to China or Japan or someplace. And so I was assigned to the Naval Ammunition Depot at Hastings, Nebraska. And most people don't realize that there was an ammunition depot in Nebraska. And so I spent 8 months doing guard duty. And that was probably the best duty that a Marine could have. Good liberty, and the food was excellent. And there was a college, Hastings College was there, and that was, well, I think the Air Force people beat the Marines, I don't know. But that was good duty, and from there I went up on the 4th of June. I was discharged at Chicago again, and then back home.